another new novel takes us inside the food industry in a very different way. Sweetness Number 9 is a darkly comic debut novel from Stephen Eric Clark. It's the story of a young man who lands his dream job as a chemist in the secretive world of an industrial flavor manufacturer. Doug Gordon asked Stephen Clark for a taste of the book.
To produce a truly remarkable flavor, you had to know what a sample's subtlest notes were comprised of. And this is, in many ways, a godly task. Consider the humble pot roast. It is a sublime creation rising up from more than 600 different flavor molecules, and that's before it's served alongside a dollop of garlic mashed potatoes and a pile of pork fat green beans. With such vast resources and so many privately held compounds, Goldstein, Olivetti, and Dark boasted a veritable book of life. Call it youthful exuberance if you must, but I wanted to taste the sweetness that had been sequestered for so long in nature and now called Jupiter Park home.
Stephen, what inspired you to write a novel set in the world of the flavor science industry?
Well, I had never really thought about flavorings until I read Fast Food Nation. The chapter on food product design really opened my eyes. I'd never really stopped to consider that one word in the list of ingredients, flavor. When I did, it's like whenever you learn a new word, it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I started to ask myself, what does this mean? You know, if I'm eating these microwave dinners that have flavorings added to them, am I eating an herb-roasted chicken, or am I just eating the idea of an herb-roasted chicken?
I think another thing that's interesting about your novel is that it's the first novel to be set in the flavor science industry, isn't it?
It is. I'd certainly never read a novel that was set in this industry. And whenever I knew that, I sort of felt, oh, God, I've got to get this thing done so that nobody beats me to the punch, because it offered so many ways into talking about American culture that I hadn't seen before. Food connects to the military, connects to changes in the American supermarket and the changes to our agricultural policies. Most importantly, changes to our family life. How we eat changes how we interact with other people. So once I saw that I could do all of this and use a whole new metaphor system that I hadn't seen in fiction before, I got very excited.
Your novel starts in 1973 and ends 39 years later in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why did you want to explore this time frame?
Well, and there are three time periods, really, because I do go back to the war years in Europe. I wanted to make the World War II the baseline because so much of our agricultural policies changed. You know, through the military, we developed these chemicals, which first started off as bombs and became later the pesticides we use in our fields to grow our food. And so I wanted to start there in that sort of era of Tang and then move forward to the late 90s, where the next block of action really takes place, when people were starting to question it. This morning, I had reached into the deep freeze for a breakfast sandwich that I'd selected on a recent ramble through my local Acme. Sold as the manwich, this heat-and-serve meal weighed in at a hearty 790 calories. It was comprised of one sausage patty, two eggs, a couple of slices of bacon, and a roof of American cheese as orange as a road cone. I was not eating it out of idle curiosity or owing to an extravagant appetite. It was my routine on Mondays to sit down to a long working breakfast. So in addition to my knife and fork, I had a legal pad and a pencil beside my plate, along with plans to break down and identify all the components of the flavors I could detect in the manwich. Usually, all of this would have given me no small amount of pleasure, but this morning I set my pencil down after scribbling only the most rudimentary of notes, and reached for my stomach, feeling the first pangs of gastrointestinal distress, if not the deft acceleration of things to come.
Tell me about your protagonist, David Levereaux. Who is he?
Well, David Levereaux is a Nixon man at the start, mm-hmm. and he campaigns for Nixon, and he wants to just find a company that he can settle into and develop a career, develop a family, and have the life that America promises us. He starts to experience some doubts, though, when he does test sweetness number 9 prior to its bid for FDA approval, and he notices the side effects it causes in the lab rats and the monkeys that he's been given the task of testing. He wants to do the right thing, but at the same time, he's worried about jeopardizing his career. And so instead of being a whistleblower, he swallows his whistle and wakes up 20-some years later with a family and the good life, only to question it again when his family members start to show all of the same symptoms that the lab rats and monkeys once exhibited. And so his evolution in many ways charts the evolution of America at that time, sort of growing into more and more doubts and less trust of the federal government, sort of a Watergate story in many ways.
Yeah, and you mentioned the symptoms that his family experience as the years pass, as sweetness number 9 becomes America's most popular sweetener. What's going on with the family?
Well, the wife is struggling with her weight and has tried everything from the Scarsdale diet to Jane Fonda. And the daughter is suffering from what I call a generalized dissatisfaction with life. David is anxious about all of this. And his young son, who's about 10 years old, Ernest, is showing signs of what could be selective mutism, something that also came out in the monkeys that he once studied. They stopped shrieking as much. Ernest, his son, stops using verbs in his speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and David, I have to say he's a very engaging and very funny protagonist. And much of that humor comes from the way he looks at the world through the lenses of food and flavor. I'm thinking in particular about that great passage where he's thinking about his son Ernest, where you write, "Churchill once spoke of Russia as a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma. If I were to speak of Ernest in a similar way, I might describe him as a corn dog wrapped in a slice of pizza stuffed inside a Hot Pocket." I love those sentences. That's great. And it leads me to think about the connection between food and humor. Why do you think food is funny?
I don't know. The thing that makes me interested about food is that it's something that we can all relate to. In the book, I talk about the supermarket being the one place that we all still mingle. In a way, it's the church, you know, the place where we all still congregate. So food is something that everyone has a connection to, and it can show how we all react to food differently, how we all gather into certain tribes along what foods we eat. And that was what interested me about the possibilities in this book.
There's one particular detail in Sweetness Number 9 I'm curious about. David's parents were killed by Charles Whitman, the engineering student and former U.S. Marine who killed 16 people and wounded 32 others in the shooting spree at the Tower of the University of Texas in Austin on August 1st of 1966. Why did you want to make David's parents die at the hands of Charles Whitman?
Yeah, that's a good question. To me, this was when the age of anxiety really started. Before that, there was the assassination of Kennedy, but with the shooting at the clock tower in Texas, all of a sudden the public space didn't feel so safe anymore. Of course, that was amplified, you know, thousands of times on 9/11, but this was the time when life in America became a little bit more anxious, and I see that anxiety in how we interact with food. Is it safe for us? I won't eat that. I'm sure it's not good for you. GMO, no GMO. We all have our anxieties, and so charting anxiety in the 20th century for me started with that moment at Charles Whitman, and so therefore David's parents had to visit there.
And your next novel, you're working on a new novel. Can you, without spoiling too much, give us a little synopsis of what that's going to be about?
Yeah, American Gulag is going to imagine a Russian-style revolution in the United States following the collapse of the U.S. dollar. All those people who were too big to fail back after the economic collapse will no longer be too big to fail. They'll be put on the first train out of town and be sent off to all of these prisons. The largest among them will be at the former Mall of America in Minneapolis.
Perfect. Beautiful.
Bloomington, I should say.
I hope we don't have to wait 13 years to read American Gulag.
Yeah, I'm hoping it'll be a slender book. After 13 years, I want to get one out in the next year or two.
We'll look forward to it. Thank you so much, Stefan.
No, thank you, Doug.
Stefan Eric Clark's novel is Sweetness Number 9. Doug Gordon talked with him. We're talking about books and cooks in this hour. We've heard from writers. When we come back, we'll talk with chefs about food and writing. I'm Anne Strainchamps. It's to the best of our knowledge. From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.